Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 13, episode 2 of Das Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
For January 9th, 2018, my name is Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Monty Python's Life O'Brien. That's courtesy of at Meister Smudge. And I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray.
That's right. It's your boy, Miles, a.k.a. Gray's Brunatomy. And thank you from Christopher Martin of Coldplay for that.
Oh, shit.
Suggesting, yes, that was it. The legit Christopher Martin from Coldplay, not someone on Twitter.
I mean, I knew he was a fan. But
he was.
It's good that he's contributing to the AKAs. And we are thrilled to be joined in our third seat for the first time, the hilarious comedian and co-host of the Bechdel cast with crowd favorite Jamie Loftus. Please welcome Caitlin Durante.
Hey!
Oh, hi! Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. What is something from your search history that is revealing about who you are as a human being?
I recently searched for porgy, which is a combination of a porg and a corgi, because I was like, oh, did anyone come up with this idea yet? Because I'm pretty sure I made this up, and then someone had already done it.
Oh, so you're doing that thing where it's like, did I just come up with something?
Right. And you have to exactly. Verify. And I was like, yep. I had to make sure I didn't steal it. But parallel thinking, someone had already, you know, Photoshopped the face of a, yep, there it is, the face
porg.
Of a porg onto a corgi's body. But I don't think anyone has Photoshopped the face of a corgi onto a porg's body.
Wow.
So I would like to trademark that right now. Thank you so much.
That is your intellectual property.
Yes.
I thought you were going to do something about Porgy and Bess. That's where my mind goes as an old Gershwin fan. Mm.
Parallel thinking is an amazing phenomenon. Like, people would always pitch us stuff at Cracked where we had already done it, or then we would do something like at the exact same, like on the same day that they pitched it.
Oh, wow.
And they'd be like, you stole it! And it's like, we can't turn an article around in like 2 minutes.
Right. One thing I was thinking along that line a long time ago, I searched bilingual. Because I thought of a mashup of the actress Bai Ling and the Linguo, the grammar robot from The Simpsons.
Oh.
Nobody thought that up because it's not necessary. At least yours makes sense. And
how
I was
are
just
you
thinking,
not a millionaire right now?
Look, bro, Bai Linguo, you know, Linguo is dead. Anyway, that's where my mind is.
What's something you think is overrated?
Woody Allen?
What's something you think is underrated?
The movie Paddington?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
About Paddington Bear?
Yes.
Is that the new...
There's a new one coming out this Friday, I think. But the first movie, I think, came out in 2015 or right around somewhere recently. And it is a great movie, I would say, better than Citizen Kane. Thank you very much.
That's a take. Wait, what makes Paddington so moving, compelling?
Oh, man. I mean, the first 20 minutes, everyone's like, oh, the first 20 minutes of Up, cry fest. Paddington, it has nothing on Paddington. Paddington,
really?
The first 20 minutes, you'll cry, you'll laugh, you'll have a, you just get very emotionally invested in this little bear. The movie is an allegory for immigration, and it's
what?
Has all these layers, and it's just, he's so sweet and endearing.
It's just like a teddy bear looking thing with a big hat on, right?
I mean, not even, he looks like a real bear in the
okay.
movie. Like in the books, he looks more, I think,
teddy bearish.
Oh, shit. It's about... Wait, he's a Peruvian bear who's displaced by an earthquake?
Yes.
Whoa, I'm just reading the thing. It was like, after a deadly earthquake destroys a home in the Peruvian rainforest, a young bear makes his way to England in search of a new home.
Yeah.
Damn.
That's like the story of Salvadorans, I'm told, is how you say it, because they all got that, like, temporary protected status from... Because there were like two huge earthquakes. So that's very timely. Paddington is ahead of the zeitgeist.
But a xenophobic orange fuckbag doesn't like rescind his ability to stay in the country, right? Paddington is free to stay in the UK?
Yes. But the family that sort of finds him and takes him in, the father is very reluctant to help him. And then, you know, the story unfolds from there. But, you know, there's definitely some allegorical elements.
Does he have an accent?
Paddington, he is, well, okay, so he has a British accent, even though he's from Peru, but
I was going to ask, I was like, how do you finesse that?
A British, explorer finds this bear family in darkest Peru, and then he teaches them English, so they adopt his British accent. Yes.
I remember Paddington being,
and I would say English accent,
surprisingly,
for my fans out there in the UK.
I remember Paddington being surprisingly well received by critics. Like, I think it was at 98% on Rotten Tomatoes, at 77 on Metacritic. Paddington 2, 88 on Metacritic. That like Oscar Best Picture territory.
I can't wait.
I guess I'm going to cry to Paddington tonight.
Yeah, seriously. All right, let's get into format. We're trying to take a sample of the ideas that are out there changing the world. We talk about pop culture, the news. But yeah, we're just generally trying to take the temperature of the global shared consciousness. Miles, where are we at?
You know, I think we're holding steady. It's still hot. It's still hot.
Yeah,
we're like at a 101.
Yet.
Yeah, there's still a lot going on. There's still a lot going on.
And we like to open by asking our guest, what is something that global shared consciousness thinks is true that you know to be a myth?
That men are funnier than women, or that women aren't funny. Those are myths. And I know this from my personal experience, from being very funny. I think it is a global thing. I don't know if it's super pressing right now.
Right.
It might be irresponsible for me, but I'm not super keeping up with the latest news for mental health reasons. people tell me what's happening and then I'm like, oh, that's the story I should know about, but I'm not, reading the news. So I might, you might be, you know, saying things and I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
That's fine. We don't have any idea what we're talking about.
Okay, good. Great.
So we're all in the same boat.
Great. Wonderful. But yeah, so this isn't like a hot news topic that people are going around right now being like, women aren't funny. But that is a myth that I wish to debunk here and right now.
Yeah. Is that something you encounter a lot as a stand-up? Like, do you hear that?
I mean,
still?
Not from my peers, as in like the people that I choose to surround myself with, the other comedians who I call friends. But, you know, I do, I host an open mic. So I see open mic comics who are, not to say that all of them are like this, but there's plenty who are like, you know, they go up there and they say very sexist material.
Right.
Racist stuff, homophobic stuff.
Mediocre white men who feel a lot of self-confidence
almost
going
exclusively.
Up there. Yeah. Weird.
Yeah.
Damn. Come on, men of color.
Yeah, I've like people, non-comedy people who I encounter, like uncles who are like in their 50s, and you know, they'll say stuff like, yeah, even though she's like a woman, I really like her stand-up. And I'm like, that's not a separate genre. That is what, like,
you heard about this woman comedy?
Yeah. Yeah. It's really
called comedy, bro.
It's persistent.
Yeah.
And I mean, women have been the funniest thing on TV for a long time. So I feel like anybody who still believes that myth is hasn't been paying attention for like the past 15 years, I think.
Mm-hmm. Right. But they're watching like Nick at Night anyway.
Right. All right. That's a good one. Let's get into the stories of the day. H&M, the sort of knockoff fashion brand where you can get all the hottest looks from last year's fashion week for like $5 to $15. They just released a catalog or an advertisement.
Y'all saw this. Everybody saw this.
Yeah, with a black boy wearing a t-shirt that said the coolest monkey in the jungle. And Twitter had a fit. I mean, I don't get it.
Everybody Everybody. I mean, it's fucking crazy, okay? I don't know how the fuck H&M lets something like this see the light of day, right? Okay, if you go through it, either they're intentionally racist or they'll say, we're so sorry, we don't know how this happened. And if it's ignorance, that means there are not enough people of color along the chain of command for this ad to get to, for them to say, fuck out of here, fire whoever the fuck thought this is a good idea, we can't have this. Which brings us to the point. You see this kind of shit with like Zara. They had a shirt that looked like a concentration camp uniform. Urban Outfitters is fucking up constantly with their controversial shit. They had like a Ganesh like throw blanket, or they had the Kent State bloody sweatshirt. It makes you think, Is this on purpose now? Are like the brands just fucking doing this shit so we talk about them? Because look, H&M has succeeded. They got LeBron. Everybody is on, like, everybody's talking about H&M right now. And you can look at their website, 80% off sale.
Right.
So
this is how they decided to, like, get a little spike of interest.
Yeah, it's I don't know. Like,
there's got to be better ways than to be horrifically racist, though. Like,
right, well, I
why
guess,
aren't they just doing other things?
I don't know. Maybe they just see, like, in raw data the amount of impressions or the amount of mentions or the, like, just their name, the amount of name checks that happen as a result of this stuff is probably, you know, any publicity is good publicity, right? If it's if you have that kind of, like, ancient mentality. I mean, it's interesting because H&M stock has been, like not in a good place, to say the least. And, like, analysts, like, 51% of analysts, like, recommend you sell their stock. That was even before this. So they're not in a good place. So maybe this is, like, a Hail Mary thing, like, where they're like, oh, well, Urban Outfitters, like, a people, like, Dove. Like, you know, there are many brands who you think should know better.
Right.
And it happens too frequently that it's like, what's going on?
Right. They're counting on this, like, making a splash on the internet, but, like, not really causing any lasting damage, it seems like.
Yeah.
And we should make sure it does cause lasting damage and boycott H&M. It's a fucking shitty company.
It's just so hard to get people, like, I don't know. I feel like people need to figure out how to effectively start boycotting products because, like, that's really the only way that companies listen because they're, you know, they're all they're worried about are their profit margins.
Right.
So
now when I tell people to boycott, like, the whole country just boycotts.
That's
cool.
True.
Oh, yeah. You're very
and you're misusing your power, my man. Yeah. I told you yesterday, you used to tell people, tweet it out that you're no longer wearing H&M.
Hard thing about boycotting something, though, is that if you were to boycott all the problematic companies, there's really almost nothing left to buy.
Except for homespun clothing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, wait, what's that?
I mean, like, literally homespun, like, you would, like, be on a loom.
Oh, okay.
Like,
so not your own... a company, just making your own
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, take it into your own hands.
But unless... that does sound like a brand.
Yeah.
Right. Homespun.
Homespun clothing, brought to you by Miles. Yes, I don't know. It's one of those things, too, because it's been written up a few times, especially with Urban Outfitters, because they do it so frequently, that people in the PR world say, there's no way you can fuck up that frequently and it not be on purpose.
Yeah.
Unless you just have the worst hiring, like, process ever, and you're like, yeah, sure.
That's what they say about Urban Outfitters, right? Because they, like, have one of these every 6 months.
Like, every
like. They just, like, feed us
season.
A steady diet of really controversial, offensive
yeah,
shit.
Chinese man costume in 98. The ghetto-wopoly, like, Monopoly board game. Everybody loves a Jewish girl with the dollar signs t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
New Mexico, cleaner than regular Mexico t-shirt. Navajo hipster panties.
One.
They did a Holocaust shirt. It's like, what the fuck? I don't know.
Do they think they're being edgy? Like,
yes.
What?
That's what we think. It. Like, is that, yeah, maybe.
Right. They're like, I can guarantee that during one of those meetings, they were like, the Sex Pistols, you know, they had, like, swastikas. We want this t-shirt to be, like, our Sex Pistol swastika. is how I envision that going.
Which, sadly, today is just a swastika again.
Right. H&M is Swedish. So is there maybe something where, because not only is their boardroom exclusively white, but their entire country is, like,
very
full
white.
Of just white people that I also know that European countries, like, will yell monkey and shit during soccer games.
Yeah, they can't feign ignorance on that. Like, the
right.
the equating black people to monkeys and apes thing is global.
Right.
So you can't play the well we didn't know card on this one.
Yeah,
but European countries seem to be, like, quicker with that, like, reference than I imagine Americans are. So maybe that's it. It's, like, part of some sort of European naive racism or something.
I mean, I don't know if that's everybody.
I'm not saying it excuses anything.
No,
saying in terms of whether it was intentional or not. Like, whether this could have, because, you know, it's an ad for a major company that's traded on the stock market. This is, like, hitting their stock is turning down a little
right.
bit. Not as much as when they released their sales figures, but it's turning down slightly. And so I'm just wondering, like, you know, 20 people looked at this ad and were like, you know, this photograph was picked out of probably 1,000 photographs that were taken that day.
Well, I'm sure if you think about it, like the way that set worked, unless they're like photoshopping the designs on the models after the fact, someone on that set was like, okay, and put this child in the coolest monkey in the jungle hoodie and take a picture. I don't know if there's anybody of color on that set to be like, hey, I don't know if you want to really do that, or if maybe it's not their place
How
to say something.
How old was the model? Was he
like
a kid?
Like
6 or 7.
Yeah, or however, yeah, he's really young.
Okay.
So it's not like the kid,
I was going to say, because I'm always curious about ads like that that are extremely offensive. The model, I mean, has to, I guess, agree to wearing whatever or doing whatever. If it's a kid, probably...
Yeah.
Wouldn't, you know, be inclined to speak up, but...
Or who knows if their parent was there and they'd be like, don't dress my child in this bullshit.
There's, there's got to be... but you see plenty of ads like that where there's, like, an adult person of color featured, and you have to wonder, like, do they put up any sort of protest? Or for them, it's a paycheck. They probably can't really don't feel like they're in a position to contest whatever it is because they're like, well, I'll get fired and then I won't get the money that I thought I was getting for this job. So,
well, I think one thing just to consider, even if they're it's everybody who works there or in the decision making seats is white, they're a global brand. So you have a global responsibility. You have stores in Africa. You have stores in the Middle East. You have stores in Asia. So then you need to refine your process to make sure you're not just fucking offending everybody. Because it's just, I don't know. I'm gobsmacked.
Mm-hmm. So fuck H&M. That's insane. We also, so the college football playoff was last night. And Alabama won, as I predicted. It was a pretty good game. President Trump was in attendance.
Yes.
And, there were cameras focused on him during the national anthem.
As it would be if he's the president of the United States.
Right. And somebody for whom the national anthem is incredibly important, and it has caused him to, you know, alienate half the nation by, and, you know, get people to rise up against these spoiled athletes who are disrespecting the national anthem by kneeling during it. And he didn't seem like he knew the words to the national anthem.
No, but are you surprised? Is anyone surprised?
Yeah.
You are?
How do you get to be president of the United States and not know the words of the national anthem? Like,
I mean, I think we're past that being a reason. Like, how do you get president if you don't know the national anthem? It's like, how do you get the president and you're a sex offender? How do you get the president because you're a fucking thief? How do you get the president because you're a fucking xenophobe?
Don't you hear the national anthem, like, constantly as the president of the United States? Aren't people, like, playing that shit when you walk into a room? Like,
I think it's hail to the chief when you walk
into a room. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Even so, he's how old? In his 70s?
70s.
Yeah.
He's had 70 years to hear it. And absorb the lyrics.
I don't really care. I mean, like, this is the least offensive thing to me, that an old guy who probably has diminished mental capacity doesn't remember a song that even people who sing it publicly fuck up on.
Mm-hmm.
This is the least of our worries right now. But it's interesting because the way he does it too is like he starts off being like, oh, say can you see? And then he gets like maybe a couple stanzas in.
Even at the beginning, he's a little behind the singer. Like he's letting them like say the word before he goes in. But then this is like one of the most identifiable things I've seen him do, because it's like when you're like singing in church or, you know, trying to act like you know the words to a song. And he's like, you know, acting like he was singing that word already.
Maybe mumbling over the lyrics. But then he also does this thing where like he totally just full on pulls the ejection lever and just doesn't sing for certain parts because he knows like I can't even fake mouth these lyrics.
Right.
And it reminds me of like, man, growing up, you know, I love hip hop. You love hip hop.
Yes.
I can identify with this because there are times I try and sing along to a rap song and like I'll start off mad confident. And then partway through, I realize, oh, wait, I don't know all the words of this part.
Right.
Case in point, Wu-Tang Clan's song Triumph off the album Wu-Tang Forever.
Right.
You know, maybe I can illustrate this better. Nick, please drop the beat.
So we're going to do
So, you know. He's like, what, y'all thought y'all wasn't going to see me? I'm the Trump of this shit.
Miles is the national anthem singer.
Hold us here forever, motherfuckers.
And I'm President Trump.
This 2018, all right, my Zeit Gang and my Zeit Gangerettes, let's do it like this. I'ma rub your ass to the moonshine. Let's take it back to 79. Then we go up atomically. Socrates, philosophies, and hypotheses. Can't define how I'll be dropping these mockeries. Lyrically perform armed robbery. Flee with the lottery. Possibly they slaughter me. So this is the thing. At the end, it's hard. Yeah, Jack, you kind of you could hype man the song, mm-hmm. but I had to inspect the
Ottery. Yeah.
Exactly. Lobotomy. Phlebotomist. Right. So yes, that's why for once in my life, I identify with the struggle to recall lyrics.
Mm. Sure.
But also, I mean, look, this is the least of our fucking problems with this man.
Yeah.
I agree.
I just think it's funny that.
Yeah, it's fun to watch.
I just think it's interesting. Ooh. As super producer Anna Hosnia would say.
In this climate.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back.
Whew.
So we wanted to talk. Apparently, Ivanka Trump tweeted, eldest daughter and advisor to President of the United States, Donald Trump. We just mentioned him before the break.
Heard of him?
She praised the speech given by Oprah Winfrey about that sparked the rumors that she might run for president, which is kind of crazy because she's talking about how empowering and inspiring it was. And I think she closes it out with time's up exclamation point. It's almost like she hasn't heard of her father or something.
Right.
So we wanted to take this opportunity to just go through. We've covered a couple of people who have accused him of sexual assault in the past. We're going to try and take you through all of it and just kind of give you an idea of where we're at with this guy and his accusers, because you start to notice a lot of similarities between the accusations, and you also can pick up on trends based on what he said on that Access Hollywood tape and what these women allege.
Here's my question, just off top, okay? Because she was getting dragged on Twitter, clearly, because of all of the things her father did. But what's the line with holding her accountable for this other man's actions, right? Because I understand that she's not the one perpetrating these actions, but I guess it's because it's the complicity.
Yes.
Because, the people use the same logic with Hillary and Bill of look at what your husband did, blah, blah, blah. And I don't think it's fair to hold her accountable for this man's actions. But I can see how tone deaf the tweet is. And I just want to raise a question. Do you think Ivanka knows what she's doing in that she is trying to subtly take a jab at her father? Is it that she lives in a vacuum where she's such an enabler to her father that she doesn't even believe what's being said about him? Or I don't know. I'm just curious to know what people's thoughts are on that part of what the motivation is, because it's weird. She always tries to walk this very fine line of half sleep, half wokeness thing that it's really weird.
Yeah, it's almost a line that's so fine it doesn't exist, because it's in two separate places at the same time.
Right.
Which you can't be in completely different places at the same time.
Does she have a history at possibly making subtle jabs at her father, or does she seem to be mostly supportive?
Well, it's not the first time she's advocated for something that's diametrically opposed to her father's philosophy.
She does it in a very positive, confident way. Like at the RNC, she talked about how this was going to be the most feminist, progressive administration.
Right.
And you to the point that you believed it. Mm. Or at least you believed that she believed it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that has not been the case.
No, right. Not at all.
So I think she is just high on her own supply. She just is able to that's my new favorite phrase. She's just able to I don't know, it's cognitive dissonance. It's her mind is able to just make sense of two completely contradictory realities, and when she can't make those two things work together, she takes a sleeping pill, like we learned in Fire and Fury. She's just all right, I'm going to sleep, guys. Dad's committing crimes.
I'm going to chemically Homer Simpson on out of the room.
So speaking of planes, let's kick things off in the 1980s with Jessica Leeds. She was on an airplane. The guy sitting next to her started groping her and reaching up her skirt. Later on, she would recognize him. This was kind of before Trump was nationally famous. She eventually recognized him as the guy who Donald Trump and like the Trump family became like kind of more famous in her town. And she saw him at some sort of like charity dinner. And he walked up and said, "I remember you. You were the cunt woman from the airplane."
Jesus.
So that's how we kick things off. There is Kristen Johnson in the early 90s. Again, put his hand up this woman's skirt before it seems like he even said a word to her. So pretty much the thing he bragged about on the Access Hollywood tape. But yeah, she just describes like looking over and this guy's reaching up her skirt and it's Donald Trump.
Our president.
Yeah, that one. Next up, 1992, Jill Harth, had a business deal with Trump. And you know, she was super excited. He was funding her and her boyfriend, you know, life partners, project that they've always wanted to do. And he invited them down to Mar-a-Lago to, you know, close the deal. And while she and her husband were on a tour, he pulled her into one of his children's bedrooms and, you know, attempted to rape her.
This was in Mar-a-Lago?
In Mar-a-Lago, yeah. 1994, Jane Doe. This is the 13-year-old girl you heard a lot about in the run-up to the election. She claims that Trump and billionaire Jeffrey Epstein raped her when she was 13 at a series of parties in 1994. And then Jeffrey Epstein later pled guilty to soliciting young women. There's also a report that Jeffrey Epstein used to use Mar-a-Lago as a way to like recruit underage women. Mm. And Trump isn't involved in that, but that's like a civil suit that was brought. And it's just crazy to realize that the news is so fucking bonkers that like a lawsuit alleging that one of the president's properties was a hotbed for recruiting underage sex workers. And like, it was barely noticed by anyone.
Just put in my gasps of disbelief. It's just crazy again, right? Any other person, typically the media will hold their feet to the fire. I think the media is really fucking up too, because it's easy to just talk about whatever is the story du jour for Trump.
Yeah.
When these are like really, really, really fucking troubling things.
Yeah.
And this dude is on fucking wax saying, yeah, "I grab women by the pussy," or like, you know, someone is accusing him and Jeffrey Epstein of this kind of behavior. And then Jeffrey Epstein is actually pleading out to courting women as young as 14.
Right. And then these assholes are talking about Trump forgetting the words of the national anthem.
Yeah. And then us being like doing Triumph covers.
Right.
But like, I don't know. Like, I just want to bring this up in the middle of it. I don't mean to derail it, but like, what? I don't know. At what point does the media also have to take this seriously too? Because man, this should have already kept this man out of even running, you know?
Yeah.
But that wouldn't stop someone like Donald Trump. He's entitled. He thinks he has,
right.
He has the money and the influence to be like, "Oh, I can squash these." He probably doesn't even think what he was doing was assault. He just feels so entitled to women's bodies that he's like, "Yeah, I can touch a woman wherever. And that's my right." Like, he's such, God.
But that's his belief system, right? But then don't we as a society have the responsibility to correct, to pop people's bubbles? And
totally.
I just feel like we haven't really done a good job of popping this dude's bubble.
Right.
Being like, "I'm sorry, we don't live there. Like, this is not how human beings are supposed to behave."
Well, I mean, when you present allegations towards someone like Donald Trump with a lot of money and power and influence, a lot of people would assume that these women are just coming out because they want money.
Right.
They want some of that money. That almost never happens, if not never happens. Like, it never happens that way. There's no reason not to believe these women. Like, yeah, but you're going to have so many shitty people being like, "Oh,
right,
this is just a money grab. That's why these women are coming forward." And that's such a dangerous message to keep perpetuating.
Right. Especially now too. Like mm-hmm. I think, you know, we're trying to move past this era of women being afraid to come out into the open and hold men accountable for this kind of shit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, when you think about this woman too, the Jane Doe woman, like she pulled her suit because she was getting like death threats. And yeah. all these other things. And like, it's easy to believe because that was the pre-Weinstein era of how women were treated who were coming forth with accusations. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this has to be revisited.
Right.
And like, especially because now there's an openness and there's an understanding, there's empathy, there people are willing to take this shit seriously. And I feel like we're fucking up on this too. Mm-hmm. Like, cause we got the biggest alleged, right. you know, sex crime, like running point for right. the country.
Right.
And it's crazy that, like, it shouldn't have to be this way, but that's just how our society works, where it's like timing is everything.
Yeah.
Where since, like, the post Harvey Weinstein news breaking, like, that has prompted a lot of other people to come forward in a way that they are now more believed than they probably would have. Because,
right.
like, remember James Franco and how a few years ago everyone was like, oh, you were preying on an underage woman, but no one's really talking about that anymore, and he just won a Golden Globe.
Yeah, like, you got the Time's Up
because
pin
it on. didn't happen at the right time. It didn't happen in this post Harvey Weinstein
right.
era of holding men accountable for their abuse and harassment. So yeah, like the time is now
yeah.
for Donald Trump too, but like it just sucks that it has to happen in this like narrow window of time where people will be like, oh well, yeah, that these stories are probably true.
Right.
It's just very infuriating. Women should be able to come forward at any point and be believed.
Yeah,
but
receipts are receipts.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's no. Anyway,
we might as well address the James Franco thing, because we kind of talked around it yesterday. But I mean, I've read the actual transcripts of his conversations with the 17-year-old girl. I've also seen people on Twitter defending him and being like, "Well, he didn't do anything; like nothing came of it." So, like, let's focus on the real problems. But he was still trying to lure a 17-year-old girl when he knew she was a 17-year-old girl
right.
to his room, like to have sex with him, and then you know. Eventually, when she made it difficult for him and she was like, yeah, maybe I'll like or said she told one of her friends, he was like, bye. So it wasn't the fact that she was an underage child that dissuaded him.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
anyway, sorry, we can move on. I just felt like we had to kind of.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
These things should be talked about.
I mean, you talk about like a double standard. If someone was sexually assaulted at a YMCA that Obama had worked out
right.
at once, like the right-wing media would be called like YMCA gate, and they would be nonstop like trying to
get nailed on his fucking head.
Right. That would be like what the first thing they brought up. And this is just a fucking laundry list. Like this is so extensive and detailed, and there is trends.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of peripheral information that would corroborate it. It's just
right,
and people who are predators usually make a habit out of that type of behavior. Like it's usually not a one-time thing. Like
right.
it's a pattern of behavior.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, you can say that he doesn't necessarily at different points think it's assault, but I mean, some of this stuff is just so much. Like you know, we've talked about other people, you know, being like. You know, rape is not always guy like pulls you into a like stairwell or something. Like that's actually what he's doing in a lot of these cases. He's mm-hmm. like pulling women against their will into like rooms. Just because he like owns the stairwell doesn't make it any less of like him being a cartoon rapist. Mm. So there's a whole genre of these where he just barges into Miss Teen USA contestants and without like knocking, and everybody like scatters and is like, why is he doing this? And he just kind of walks around and is like, yeah, it's great. You get to look at women half naked. That's also, I think, a thing that's referenced in the Access Hollywood tape.
Right. And these are underage girls too.
Yeah. Underage.
Like especially the Miss Teen USA. Like, whew. Which is another theme too, is he likes, younger women.
Yeah.
I
mean, he was already talking about how fuckable his daughter was when she was like 14 years old. There's a former Miss Teen USA contestant who alleges that he hugged her inappropriately and would walk into the dressing room. Yeah, there's just a whole string of these Trump barging into changing rooms. So, yeah, he clearly had a tactic that he wanted to use. The next one is Rachel Crooks, who we've already kind of gone into detail, but he invited her to Trump Tower and then, you know, forcibly kissed her. 2005, this one's incredible. A People magazine journalist named Natasha Stoyanov was writing an article about Donald Trump and Melania Trump's first wedding anniversary. And she says, we walked into that room alone and Trump shut the door behind us. I turned around and within seconds, he was pushing me up against the wall and forcing his tongue down my throat. 2006, Jessica Drake, he forcibly kissed and grabbed her and two friends inappropriately. She was an adult film performer. And he also like always says the same thing. He's like, oh, come on. Which I guess isn't that original, but it just does seem like something you could.
Yeah, that's what a spoiled fucking child says.
Right.
Who gets whatever the fuck they want. You know what I mean? It's just like, no, come on, I'm not used to not getting what I want. Come on. Like, come on. Come on. Yo, right. Come on to you, bro.
You feel
come the fuck on.
Entitled to these women's bodies.
Right. Another former Miss USA contestant says Trump personally inspected each woman prior to the contest to the point where she says it was the dirtiest I felt in my entire life.
Inspect?
Yeah, I don't know. In 2006, he was on Letterman, and backstage he groped Nini Laaksonen, but she's former Miss Finland, so yeah, his type. Then Summer Zervos, we've talked about her before, but she's a apprentice winner who he invited to a bungalow at the Beverly Hills Hotel and did creepy shit too.
And super producer Nick just like wanted to bring the attention to. He also says in that tape, right? They let you do it,
right?
Right? Like in the Access Hollywood tape, I just further underlines the mentality is that he's either willfully not processing or has the inability to process the fact that he's violating these people,
right?
Because he's like, oh, they let you do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
right.
Why? Because they didn't like pull out a gun and shoot you point blank. They let you do it. I don't know. An interesting look into this man's entitled deviant mind.
Well, there's the fight or flight response, but then there's also like the
right.
freeze and like, oh, I'm being assaulted. Some people just
your
cognitive reaction is to just be like
shut down.
That's what I do. Like when I'm like threatened or like in a like scary or nervous situation, my brain just stops working. Like I have never won a single argument with my wife because like my fight or flight is just brain shuts down and then I'm just like
so he's probably just interpreting he's interpreting that as oh well, this is
right.
consent
but yeah they let you do it.
He doesn't even understand the
that's
concept
just,
of consent
yeah that's
so.
Intense fear
right
that has paralyzed someone
And then the most recent one is Cassandra Searles, Miss USA contestant, who, surprise, Trump groped her and invited her back to his hotel room. She said, he probably doesn't want me telling the story about that time. He continually grabbed my ass and invited me to his hotel room. So that was just 5 years ago.
Yeah. So let's, again, the purpose of this was not just to, like,
bum everyone out
but, like, it bears repeating, right? Ivanka, this is a long list. And who knows? This is an incomplete list, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what I mean?
God.
So, you know, that's cool. Shouts to Oprah because the speech was great.
Yes.
But Ivanka, you need to remember where you are in the context of all of this. Either you are the greatest enabler of your father, you are horribly complicit, I don't know. But we saw the tweet and we're like, wow, I think people just need to be reminded how vile.
We've also seen him grab her ass like on national TV.
Yeah,
like,
and you've seen her like
you're
move
a victim
her.
Too. Like you can help a lot of people out.
Yeah, she has the platform. Like if she is a true feminist and ally and everything, like she has to like tell her father to fuck off. Like be like, I'm not a part of this family anymore.
If those rumors are true that she wanted to run for president. that's, she could push her boat out on that. Like yeah. being like, I literally, I'm disowning my father.
This is your chance to go down in history, like on the right side of history, as opposed to going down as like, someone in the bunker with Hitler.
Yeah. So. But that estate tax, baby, woo! Is low. Yeah. So I got to stay in that will.
All right. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back. And we're back, and we have super producer Anna Hosnier here, and we're talking about the upcoming live-action remake of Aladdin. Aladdin was a big movie for you guys, it seems like.
What is yes. For, yes.
Sorry, certainly. I was talking to Caitlin and Miles because they were, like, singing the songs to it, not to your people, Anna. During the break,
okay.
Miles and Caitlin were singing a song and saying they know a lot of words to it. So is this something that was on your radar?
The movie Aladdin? Sorry.
No, sorry, the live-action remake.
Yes, 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 yes.
I heard about it because everyone was like, wow, they hired a person of color to actually be in Aladdin.
Right.
But I know that created some controversy,
well,
too.
It's because Jake Gyllenhaal was busy.
Right.
Is that true? They wanted to cast
no.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
No, just, that's a Prince of Persia.
That's a Prince of Persia
for all
reference.
My Middle Easterners out there.
And video game fans.
But they are now getting some blowback because apparently they are, you know, for their background actors, they are just taking white people and, you know, giving them a spray tan, essentially, like darkening their skin with makeup.
Oh,
and
no.
then, yeah, just throwing them out there. And, you know, Guy Ritchie's like, no, it's only the Guy Ritchie is the filmmaker they have decided to give this movie to.
Yeah. Why Guy Ritchie
yeah.
of all fucking directors?
I don't know. He just fucked up the Sword in the Stone story, the King Arthur. And now they're like, here, let's give you another huge franchise.
Did you like Sherlock Holmes?
I thought it was fun.
I thought it was fun, but I don't think he's made a good movie since Snatch.
I'm sorry, was Man from U.N.C.L.E. by Guy Ritchie?
Yes.
I like that one.
Mm. Mm.
It was family friendly.
I mean, I just feel like based on his, like, you know, locks, there's Lock, Stock, you know, like in Snatch, like he had a very unique aesthetic that I thought was really cool. But I guess you can evolve over time, not to say that you have to you
sure.
stay in one
right.
genre.
But it seems like he's evolving to not making as good of movies.
Yeah, the trend seems downward, right?
Well, ever since Madonna left.
Yep. See, yeah. that's what happens.
So where is Aladdin set? Is there a specific...
It's
I know
in
the animated feature.
Agrabah, which is made up.
Right.
So, but that's just, it's like an Arab-Persian region, technically. I want to assume Agrabah is probably like Afghanistan-ish area.
Okay.
But of course, I do not know.
Right.
Do not ask me.
Because it's made up.
Yes, it's completely made up.
Yeah. But where's the actual story come from, though? Is that a foreign creation, or is that actually like lore?
It comes from the stories of the 1001 Nights. Which was a story about from Scheherazade, but based off me and super producer Nick's research this morning, it was written in like the 1800s by a European like translator.
Mm-hmm.
He like added to it, and originally I guess it was based in China. So it's like
wow.
this really weird story that they took and I guess redid for Disney. But yeah, so. Some European translator decided to just add it in because he came up with the story and decided it was now part of 1001 Nights.
So Scheherazade is the queen. Like a fictional character, or she's the
yes,
actual?
Yes, she's a character in the 1001 Nights, which is
it's
in
like
America
Mother
known
Goose
as
type
Arabian
like,
Nights. She's the queen of this like kingdom in Arabian Nights,
and she tells these stories.
Yes, kind of.
Okay,
and Aladdin is one of
she's
those
interwoven within them.
Okay.
Yeah, Aladdin was added later. It's not part of the original set of stories, so...
Okay.
Europeans, you know?
But what's even the explanation for why you couldn't just hire people who don't need makeup for their skin to appear darker, like
right.
people of color? Like, what is there...
I think maybe that they don't have the extras for it.
Right.
That
I mean, no, it's
true,
it's a shitty reason, but I'm sure that's probably what they think, that it's easier to just get all these white people who want to be in a movie who they can just spray tan in.
That is
and,
probably what they think, but they are not Right, about that.
Right.
There's so
many. I'm sure they could go to these countries and pull actual people as extras.
They asked another director, and he was like, the talent exists and is accessible, and there's no way that Asian extras could not have been hired to meet the needs of the film. Failing to hire on-screen talent of the right ethnic identity to meet the clear needs of this production is just plain wrong. We expect better from all filmmakers.
Right.
Yeah, and, you know what? Who wouldn't have done that? Like an Arabic director. Why did they hire Guy Ritchie? Like, no.
It's going to be very fast talking, a lot of quick edits.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Suddenly, like, Fat Boy Slim.
No one's there. You have to watch with subtitles.
There's actually a heist. Taking of the lamp is a big heist thing.
Yeah, the genie is British.
All smash cuts. Yeah, it's
Jason
crazy.
Statham is there for some reason.
The genie is Dead Mouse. It's going to be cool. Well, I guess the quote is from Disney. They said, great care was taken to put together one of the largest, most diverse casts ever seen on screen. Mm-hmm. Diversity of our cast and background performers was a requirement. Only in a handful of instances when it was a matter of specialty skills, safety, and control were crew made up to blend in. Hmm. I don't buy that because Disney has a lot of money.
That is a weirdly somewhat racist statement. Due to safety and control, like what would happen if you put some Arabs?
I think they're trying to say like stunt people, like they didn't have enough Asian stunt people.
Okay.
They
like sword jugglers
or people like who are handling horses.
Right.
But like if you cared, you could find somebody, go on Twitter and be like, hey, are you a person of color who knows how to handle horses?
Right.
Hit us up and we will fly you out here or whatever. Or like the other director saying, just go to a country where that is probably accessible. I'd imagine there are people who know how to handle horses all over the world.
Yeah.
But it's being made by Disney, and they don't have much of a budget, so it's tough for them.
They're already the cheapest motherfuckers.
Well, another thing that was making people very angry is that for Jasmine, they cast Naomi Scott, I believe her name is, who is an Indian-American actress.
Mm.
And that really upset people who were like, no, it should have been an Arab actress. And I understand that. It does feel like that it is like an Arab-cultured film, and that they should have went out of their way to find one of these, like, Arab actresses who gets basically no time because she's a brown woman and only white women are cast these days. But at the same time, like this is a discussion I had on my podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, with my co-host Shireen over, is it okay that they cast an Indian woman? Because technically she is a brown woman.
Yeah.
Or should they have gone for Arab? And while I understand that they should have gone and cast an Arab woman in this role, I also feel like it's not okay to like shut out Indian people and say, sorry, you're Indian, you can't have this. Which is, it's not fair because these are also brown people who had only one brown princess growing up. Jasmine was every brown girl's princess. Yeah. I mean, even if you're Indian, if you're Arab, if you're Persian.
Man, I'm black and Japanese. Aladdin's the only fucking one I saw. I was like, yo, that's me.
Right.
Like, I'm fucking Aladdin.
Yeah, like two different types of brown people shouldn't have to fight over a single role.
Well, because we're fighting over literal scraps.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I feel like it is the first time for people who are millennials, older 80s or 80s kids, whatever, that you saw a brown Disney character, and that kind of just became everybody's, you know, like oh shit, there it is for the first time.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It feels negligent to put brown people against each other and be like, well, what? How brown are you? And
it's you're the wrong kind.
We're all brown, and we all looked up at this one princess and said, there's me. That's the princess that represents me. So I do agree, you know, it would have been nice for them to go and actually find an Arab actress who you haven't heard of and bring her into the light and show that these, you know, we're out here.
Right.
Us brown women are out here.
Well, at the same time, it's not like, oh, great, another Indian actress gets
taking over. Right.
Because they don't get.
Because let's be real. Before that, I could only look up to a Jamaican crab named Sebastian.
Right.
Or whatever the fuck his name was.
Who's just like, relax.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, shit, kiss the girl. And I'm like, yeah, I think that's got to be a black man doing that voice. And that's all the fuck we had. I was like, cool, that was the closest shit.
We talked about that on yesterday's, or talked about Little Mermaid on yesterday's Bechdel cast that I recorded with you guys. And I should have mentioned that song because that's a song that's like, force yourself on the girl.
Kiss
the
girl.
Yeah.
Just kiss her. It doesn't matter if she's ready or not.
boy.
Yeah, Little Mermaid's problematic.
Yeah, she's not a very
so
strong
is
character.
Almost every movie.
All right. That's all the time we have. Caitlin, it's been a goddamn pleasure having you.
Thank you so much for having me. I've had such a fun time here today.
Where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Caitlin Durante, and you can check out my podcast, The Bechdel Cast, where we talk about the portrayal of women in movies and how it's usually, surprise, not very good. And you can follow that on at Bechdel Cast on Twitter.
It's such a good podcast.
It's a great podcast.
Thank you.
I already said that.
No, I'm a bigger fan.
Miles, would you care to comment on the podcast?
Oh, I love the Bechdel Cast. I'm just not saying anything because y'all haven't invited me to come on yet. So
you're right up there at the top of our list.
And I would like to do No Escape with Ray Liotta.
Ooh. There are no women in that movie.
I know.
You might as well recommend Dunkirk.
Yeah, right. Well, there's a physical form of a woman in it. I'm pretty sure No Escape doesn't have even a fucking. There's not even one woman who
she
appears.
Even, like, sneak by in the background.
No, because it's about a fucking weird, crazy island where convicts are killing each other. Anyway, that's not the point.
Miles, where can people follow you?
You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Miles of Gray.
Anna Hosnier, where can people follow
you? You can follow me on Twitter at Anna Hosnier, and you can listen to my podcast, Ethnically Ambiguous, on iTunes and wherever you find podcasts, and it will soon be on How Stuff Works, so you cannot escape me.
Ambiguous. It's coming. That's what we call it here behind the scenes.
Yo. Cut that out.
Wow. Epic eye roll from Anna.
And you can follow me at Jack_O'Brien. You can follow us at Daily Zeitgeist on Twitter, at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page. Just search Daily Zeitgeist and you'll find that. And we have a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to all the articles we used as sources for each episode. And that's going to do it for today. Miles, any songs to throw to? Can I request Scary Hours? Cash Still Rules, off of Wu-Tang Forever.
Yes.
My favorite song that's like a super deep cut.
For all you guys who are ever questioning Jack's Wu-Tang credentials, let him know that he's listening to, what, track 4 off disc 1 on Wu-Tang Forever, one of the forgotten tracks?
Yeah, it's forgotten, wildly underrated. Check it out. And that's going to do it for today. We will be back tomorrow because it is a daily podcast. We'll talk to you then.
Shake the niggas. Scary hours, no money out. Smash the Guinness style. Play the outfield. Lucille switch cracks on chill. She's a rich fiend. Sacrifice her fam. Ship the niggas to Queens. Guess jeans. He charged 35 beans. Hit the cell phone. Regulate with well-known tone. A Wally Kingpin who also slammed the Stripe edition. What up, Corleone? Smoke the bone tone foamy. What up, he tried to sling there. Address him with chrome only. Grady with the gray beard. Transport form. Rockin' Nike at Rastafari and Bird. Piping at switching Benzes. 10 carat nigga with gold lenses. Frontin' like he's sitting on a lump. He's sitting on junk. You wanna pull a heist, draw guns and robberies. You wanna rock rep, steppin' yellow wallabies. Names arranged. The Century Fox, Little Glocks. Them niggas with stocks, wheeling in blocks. Rich lifestyle, small like an ordinary white child. But right now, sun is still shine, shed light now. Break down, liquidate guard. Fuck it, grab the nickel plate, Spencer for hire. Tension when we mention dryer. He's a slave cop, but hey pop, with Susu Bade, stop and blow that cat at the Purple Haze spot.
I remember sticking fiends at the 160 when we were starving, ducking 5-0, paying them dues. Times is hard in the slums I'm from. They got us barred and we warring and cage dodging, ripping and robbing. Got the narc sabotaging, slipping cracks in your camouflaging. Now you snitching on the squadron. That's something niggas can't pardon. City overrun by young gun with bad intention and who wear garment. So I see no need to mention the potency of a sting from a killer bee. Kicking the battery out the back of the wash cracks. They store that for your get high, you hijack. These friendly skies ain't for you, they for me and mine. This the year of the grimy nigga, ragtime. Keep these niggas on the run, peep my clan emblem. Iron lung ain't got to tell you where it's coming from. Catch you swimming with these sharks now. You rap villains, we feel the same way you feeling. Let it be known, what the blood clot you niggas dealing. You crash dummies, cash rules, still don't nothing move but the money.
Hey yo, strong arm that kid right there with wavy hair. Billy Johnson snatched him at his whip in Times Square. Took his Pumas, nameplate, Duke lost weight. Summer 88 started a fight and can't wait. Ask Dorothy, same kid, pussy up in Marcy. Blazing that Ted Rossi up in the Marquise. He lost like 100 ounces. Jake Russ's houses, had him on the porch, ass no trousers. The souped up, individual stuff, the new stuff. Same kid crying. line on the stand with Judge Kuffner. Kissed him with art numbers, 3-9 style. Before he left, he flashed in his face like Denzel. Richard Dale took his beaver, unthrew a ball in his whip. Mussie dropped and split his wig with the heater. His safe butt was all fucked up as he had me laughing. God, you see how he was laid out in the grass with dirt in his mouth. Slim woke him up, told him he wild out. Blood leaking from his teeth, he smiled like he dumbed out. Big Bolo stacking his shit, financed a Volvo. He copping shit from a small coffee shop in Soho. He's still pussy. He sell his dust up on the Lower East, posing like he rap.